We're doing the Navi Yeshaya. We're up to famous psukim in the Navi Yeshaya. What they call the 42nd chapter, the 6th pasuk. We had learned earlier that we have different interpretations as to who this prophecy is talking to. When the Navi had described Hen kulam aven efes masayim, all the prophets are false. They are futile. And there's no point in listening to them. So then the Navi says, but hey Navdi, but my servant is one that you can trust. He's my chosen one. And here we have different interpretations of these psukim. You have one interpretation that's talking about the Jewish people. You have one interpretation that's talking about Koresh, who would rebuild the second temple. You have one interpretation that's talking about the Mashiach. You have a fourth interpretation, which we're about to encounter, and that is that the beginning talks about the Jewish people, and then from our Pasuk onward, it's talking about the Navi Yeshaya. That is Rashi's interpretation. So again, we have three approaches to what's going on here. Either it's talking about the Jewish people, or it's talking about Koresh, who would build the second temple, or it's talking about Mashiach, Jewish people, Koresh, Mashiach, or it begins with the Jewish people, and now it's talking to the Navi Yeshaya. The Psukim will describe how I called out to you. I have held your hands. I have protected you. You are my covenant. You are the light unto the nations. You are going to open the eyes of the blind. You are going to free people from bondage. You are going to take people out from darkness. So these psukim were used when people wanted to be false messiahs. There were many charlatans who would appear on the scene with someone who was all bandaged up and said they couldn't see from the time they were born or for such and such number of years. And then the person would come forward and say, I will bless you, you will be healed. And then, lo and behold, the person could suddenly see. Wow. So people took this pasuk to be literal. And people took this pasuk to be a sign that someone's the Messiah. We don't view it that way. We view this as part of a broader prophecy. Either this is talking about, again, Koresh, or the Jewish people, or the Mashiach, but not that these are his hallmarks. There are many things described about the Mashiach. Or this is talking about the Navi Yeshaya. So we'll read through the Psukim and see the interpretation. Ani Adonai kiraticha v'tzedek v'achzek b'yadecha. Hashem says, Yeshaya, I've called to you in righteousness, in truth, and I've held your hand. Ve'etzorcha, and I've protected you. Ve'etencha livrit am le'or goyim. And I've established you as my covenant to them to be a light unto the nations. And here Rashi goes with the interpretation that it means unto all the tribes, which is each considered their own nations. Others will say this is talking about Koresh. I've declared you have to lead the way to be a light unto the nations, as Koresh sends out a letter and says, we all have to go back and help rebuild the second temple in honor of God. So that's a light unto the nations. Where else do you have such a righteous king who sends a public letter throughout the lands and says, let's support the Jews, let's help them rebuild their temple? So that's Koresh. A third interpretation says it's talking about the Mashiach. Hashem says, I've declared you in justice. In justice, I have declared that you will come forth, I will support you and protect you, and you will have the strength to bring the nations back to the covenant of the Torah. Lifkoach einayim ivrot, to open up the lights, the eyes of those who have been blinded. People can't see. People don't look at the ways of Hashem. It's not talking about physical blindness. It's talking about spiritual blindness. People are ignoring the miracles Hashem does. And Hashem says, I'll open you, either Yeshaya or Koresh or Mashiach or the Jewish people, will enlighten people. You will open up the eyes of those who are blinded. Leotzi mimasger asir, mibeit kele yoshev echoshech. And then you will take people out of their bondage. Because when people can't see what's going on around them, people are in bondage. When people can't live a life of value, people are in bondage. People are living a life where they don't even realize how they're really sitting in a dungeon and in a cell. Ah, you think you're free. Are you really free? Or are you running around with the social norms, with the social pressures that have nothing to do with reality? As someone once said, people buy things they don't need with money they don't have to impress people they don't like. Why? What's all this life all about? Why do I have to do that? A friend of mine was riding a bike yesterday. I said to him, why don't you wear a reflective vest? He says, it's not cool. I said, it's not cool? It's more cool to die? What does that mean, it's not cool? Cars have to see you. He said, yeah, no one else does it. I said, yeah, I did it when I rode a bike till this week. I rode a ride. He says, you obviously don't care what anyone thinks. I said, I don't know about that, but I care to live. It's a little more important to me. So when a person's living with those definitions, what are people going to say about me? They're also in a form of bondage. You can't do what's right. You can't do what's safe. You have a family. Isn't that more important? You want to make it home safe? I would think that's more important than if people are going to say you're cool by wearing a reflective vest or not.
Pressure is tough, even in the religious world, as you know.
Yeah, so lifkoach einayim ivrot, education is supposed to enlighten, and so the Navi is told you're supposed to open people's eyes. We have to delve into these psukim in a minute. We'll go into it, but there are comments. Yes.
What is our position on taking these psukim and saying like, oh, this is happening nowadays or whatever?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know.
Everything's relevant for every generation, though.
It's hard to know. There's definitely an enlightenment going on.
Oh, yes.
But we're in the middle of a battle. You can't ignore the fires raging in the country today. There's a battle. It's not only in Israel. There's a battle all over the world. You can't ignore what's happening. Trump, it's a reaction to something. Same thing with Brexit. There's a reaction. Probably the driving force of Brexit and Trump was that people are pretty fed up with certain extreme stances, including Sharia law. You have places in England that a regular person can't walk in. It's not safe. You have places in Israel that a citizen, you have signs that say Jews shouldn't come in here. In Israel. In Israel, you have plenty of Arab neighborhoods where there are signs that say, and there are some places where you have a Jewish soldier standing there saying, don't go in here. It's not safe. Jews get lynched here. So there's to say we're living this time, it's tempting to say that because you could look at the wonderful things that are happening that never happened before. So much Torah available for free on the internet. There's so much knowledge available out there. There is definitely a battle being waged. China, Russia, there are huge forces out there trying to stifle, trying to ensure that only their message gets out. And again, the Muslim world. So if you look at the small segment of the United States and those that share its values, then you say, wow, this is happening. But then you're ignoring what's happening in China, in North Korea, in Russia, and all the Muslim countries. So is this what's happening? If in Egypt you have tens of millions of people who are illiterate, who make $150 a month. I'm saying, can we ignore the suffering of so many people and say this is what's happening? Or do we say, no, there's a momentum here. We're moving in the right direction. It's only a matter of time. Knowledge spreads. People do advance. It's a hard call. What about what's happening in most of Africa? You know, I'm saying, look at the world as a world. So if you think of Australia, United States, parts of South America and Europe, you say, great. But then look at the rest. You know, there is a continent called Africa. There is a large area called Asia that has some place people are really suffering. It's a hard call. You know, in China, they say there are many, many, many people that the government takes and harvests their limbs. That when the government persecutes people, they just take them by the tens of thousands and harvest them the limbs and makes money off of them. And there's a lot going on in the world. It's hard to know. Is there a wonderful opening of knowledge? Yes. There's definitely a lot of knowledge being made available that was never made available before, both in the advancements of technology and in the availability of Torah knowledge. Yet it's hard to say. We're not yet where we'd like to be. There's still a lot, you know, millions, probably billions of people suffering. So it's hard to say that we're there just yet. We've advanced. We're ahead of the game. We're doing good. But we're not. I don't think the game's over. I don't think it's possible to call the shots just yet.
No, what I'm saying is, are we adverse to seeing this?
I'm saying I don't know how to read the map. Okay. Even Rav Kook, who kept saying we're at the footsteps, we're right there at the doorstep of redemption, said that the whole state can self-destruct. If it doesn't become religious, then it will consume itself. That was Rav Kook's declaration 70 years ago. So I'm saying that it's hard to say. I know what's going on here.
You can see that compared to what we were 70 years ago, in terms of the state and in terms of religiosity, and the question is within the Torah world, you know, disunity sometimes.
I don't know.
You would say that we don't know how to land up. We're always self-destruct, but we are people with just looking at things.
We've advanced,
yeah.
Right? For sure. Right? We see our blessings and say, thank God.
But not over yet. And you can,
yeah.
The Kol Gadol can go over 50 plus years or whatever it's looking.
Yes,
know,
sir.
Man, that was just the form of it.
Just regard, maybe this was at the beginning. The object of the phrase, the opening the eyes, is it referring to the nations or the Jewish people?
It depends. According to Rashi, this is Yeshaya's job to open the eyes of the Jewish people. According to the other commentaries, the idea is to open the eyes of the nations.
Did it say explicitly at the beginning the nations?
Okay. Right, but the word goyim, when Hashem blesses Yaakov Avinu and tells him goy ukhal goyim mimcha yetzeu, there will be nations coming from you. From here we derive the concept that every tribe is also called a nation. Because Hashem told Yaakov Avinu, nations will come from you. So how does that work? Yaakov Avinu had the 12 tribes. So from there Chazal derived that every tribe is called a nation. Yeah. There's another concept which really deserves our time, and that is Hashem says, I've declared you to have this role. And if it's talking about Koresh, Yeshaya, or Mashiach, how does Hashem define a person's role before they're born? Where did free will go? So that's a broad topic. I'll give a short answer, and you guys can think about it. It deserves a longer class, but we are taught, the Midrash says that there are certain things that predated creation. One of them is the name of Mashiach. One of them is the patriarchs. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, did they have free will? When Chazal tell us that something was declared before the world was created, does that mean there was a person identified who would do that? Or does that mean that Hashem declared there would be such a person? And then different people were given opportunity to be that. Now, we are taught that Mashiach could have come numerous times. That sounds like there were people who could have been Mashiach. Chazal tell us Yoshua bin Nun could have been Mashiach ben Yosef. Shaul could have been Mashiach ben Yosef. David would have been Mashiach ben Leah.
And there was ben Yosef.
Okay, ben Rachel. Yoshua could have been the Mashiach from Rachel.
What's the distinction between Yosef and
why do you say Yoshua wasn't from Yosef?
He was from
Ephraim, who was the son of Yosef.
Oh, that's right.
Shaul wasn't from Yosef. But Chazal described it as the Mashiach from Rachel and the Mashiach from Leah. So so Chazal does tell us this idea that there's a concept that has to come to the world, and different people have the opportunity. It's a question of who's going to live up to that opportunity. So you have, when Hashem says, I've declared there's going to be a Koresh, or there's going to be a Yeshayah, or there's going to be a Mashiach, that means there are going to be people that have to play this role. Whether you will live up to it, or it'll have to be someone else, you see that Moshe Rabbeinu was told once, I'll take someone else. As important as your job is, live up to it. You see, Moshe's life was almost taken when he didn't circumcise his son. So there is such a concept. And Koresh, Chazal say, was a disappointment. Hashem says, I gave you so much to do, and you didn't do it. You didn't live up to your responsibilities. So there is the
responsibilities that Koresh now live up to. Because if you think about it in the sense of meaning of what we know, just the
what we know is betchila belo kitzuta levasof bekitzuta. Talmud Rosh Hashanah says, initially he said, I'll give you an open check. Whatever you need, I'll cover. And then when it came down to it, he gave him a very strict quota. Here's what you're getting. Initially, he said, go build a house in honor of Hashem. And then when it came down to it, he said, build it in a way that it's based on wood, that if you rebel against my empire, we'll be able to burn it down. Wow. Build it in a... So the Gemara says different answers. When the Gemara asks, where did Koresh go wrong? So the Gemara has different answers. One answer is that he was intimate with his dog. It says that he was drinking wine and he had his pet dog next to him, and his pet dog is called his girlfriend in the Navi Daniel. Shegal Yoshevet Etzo. The Gemara says, dogs drink wine? The Gemara says, that dog was given wine. So there are different answers in the Gemara as to where Koresh went wrong. What was Koresh's, where did he err? It's not all of these. The Gemara gives different answers as to where Koresh was a disappointment. The Gemara also asks, initially we consider Koresh a Jewish king. His mother was Esther, and the Navi treats him like a Jewish king, even though he was a Persian king. And then the Navi switches, and at some point in his reign, he's treated like a non-Jewish king. We count his years like non-Jewish kings. So the Talmud in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, when it defines, where's the beginning of the year? How do you count the years of kings? So the first Mishnah discusses this, and then the Gemara says, but in Koresh we see an inconsistency. In one place the Tanakh treats him like a Jewish king in the beginning of his reign, and then later on, towards the end of his reign, you count his years like a non-Jewish king. How come? The Gemara says, initially we had high hopes for him, and then he was a disappointment. What was wrong? So the Gemara gives one of these answers. The Gemara says either this or that or the other thing. The fourth opinion is that Koresh gave all his donations on condition that you guys pray for the success of the Persian Empire. Gemara says, what's wrong with that? You're allowed to give charity for a reason. You're allowed to say, I'm giving charity so that my son will live. So for that, you have to learn the Gemara. That's Gemara in the beginning of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so today we learned about Hashem declares in advance that there are certain types of people that will have to come to the world, and there's a person whose job it will be to enlighten the world and to bring people out of their blindedness and to be able to see. And this is where we'll pick up. There's Hashem next week.